Hi, and welcome to the Emergency Quality Network Avoidable Imaging Wave 2 webinar series. I'm your host, as always, Dr. Jason Woods. Today, we are focusing on working with radiology to reduce avoidable imaging, as well as misconceptions and frustrations about emergency medicine and radiology as a partnership. We have two guests with us today. First is Dr. Joseph Feldman from the Hackensack University Medical Center. He is a clinical staff physician and chairman of the Emergency and Trauma Center there. After him will be Dr. Gregory Nicola, a radiologist specializing in neuroradiology from the Hackensack Radiology Group in Hackensack, New Jersey. Both of these physicians have been involved in partnering between emergency medicine and radiology to develop pathways for common problems that present to the ER to try to reduce avoidable imaging, as well as plug those patients into their definitive outpatient imaging and other services. They're going to discuss pearls and pitfalls of developing a program like this and also give recommendations for how a university or private ER who's looking to do something similar might get started. Let's go to Dr. Feldman to get us started.
Hello and good afternoon, everyone. We will use our back pain paradigm as an illustrative example of how to develop a team, a resultant protocol, and how to operationalize the paradigm into clinical practice. We will also discuss how we leveraged our EMR to not only operationalize our protocol, but how we used it to construct the paradigm for easy data abstraction. Toward the end of the webinar, we will discuss alternative ways of data abstraction from those listening who don't work in a large academic medical center like Hackensack. Before we get too far into the weeds, I will ask Greg to tell you about RSCAN, which stands for Radiology Support Communication Alignment Network, and his role as the ACR point person for that project.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you to the American College of Emergency Physicians for having a radiologist on today. So the Transforming Clinical Practice Initiative, I want to give a little background because it's the story of how Joe and I came together in this working collaboration. The Transforming Clinical Practice Initiative is an initiative to support clinicians transition to value-based care, i.e. basically improving quality and lowering costs. It's funded by the CMS Innovation Center. It happens to be one of the largest federally funded collaborative and peer learning initiatives there is. There are two types of awardees in this initiative. One is called the Practice Transformation Network. These tend to be large regional organizations with ties to the clinical community. And also, these organizations have the ability to coach and mentor clinicians towards practice transformation. There's also Support and Alignment Network award recipients. These tend to consist of national and regional professional associations that have strong ties through the clinical community, basically through memberships, and have unique strategic assets, such as expertise in helping their members navigate the ever-changing healthcare landscape. Many of these organizations also have value-based initiatives underway. For example, American College of Radiology has the RSCAN initiative, as Joe said, is the Radiology Support Communication and Alignment Network. And I want to highlight the word communication and alignment, because I think that's probably the best strategic asset it's brought to our initiative. And American College of Emergency Physicians, which is also a SAN recipient, has the EQUAL initiative. So I wanted to put the two initiatives side by side on this slide for you. On the left, you have EQUAL. On the right, you have RSCAN. Now, both these programs are broader than what I'm showing here, but we're specifically concentrating on reducing avoidable imaging. And when you compare the key performance indicators in both these initiatives, they happen to be very closely aligned. Now, this similarity didn't escape either American College of Emergency Physicians or the American College of Radiology, and those two societies have co-branded these initiatives as potentially being done together. That cool co-branding certainly piqued my interest, and I brought it to Joe, and Joe immediately was interested, especially because the combined programs would bring his department and my department actionable data, peer learning opportunities, and establish a real collaboration. And I'm going to turn it back to Joe now to talk about the collaboration and his leadership in designing many of these initiatives.
And to be totally transparent, it was really Greg, as he stated, who schooled me on TCPI and the EQUAL and CEDAR registries and how they will improve quality, safety, and their financial implications for hospitals and emergency medicine practices in the future. I attended a pediatric emergency department meeting where Greg was speaking about the TCPI projects and utilizing the PCARN screening tool for children's head trauma and how that data can be captured and benchmarked. As the chair of an academic emergency department, I was very aware of the Choosing Wisely campaign. All the faculty and emergency medicine resident physicians guide their clinical practices here based on evidence-based research and many clinical prediction rules. Therefore, many of the EQUAL clinical paradigms were either already operationalized or in stages of development without being formally tagged as a quote-unquote TCPI initiative. So after that meeting on PCARN, I researched and became educated about EQUAL and CEDAR. After my research, I decided to champion our hospital being part of these registries. I quickly came to the realization that a partnership with my radiology colleagues would not be good enough to gain acceptance for changing our clinical paradigms throughout the patient's transition of care through our hospital and our network. To be successful in this partnership, we must include the subject matter experts in the respective clinical disciplines, in addition to other vital members of the interdisciplinary team. Being more inclusive and obtaining consensus on a treatment protocol is part of the secret sauce of an implementation and hardwiring success.
So, Joe, how did you land on back pain as far as a clinical problem that you thought you could reduce avoidable imaging by addressing, and how did you get started?
The back pain protocol project came on the heels of me being a member of our hip fracture protocol, which was also an interdisciplinary team whose goal was to develop a treatment paradigm that would fast-track patients who incurred hip fractures from mechanical falls. The goal was to minimize them for a surgical intervention to occur on or before 24 to 36 hours from diagnosis. This fast track has been shown to dramatically decrease morbidity and mortality and would increase patient satisfaction and throughput for the affected patients. We have received a Joint Commission disease certification for this program. Since orthopedics was the true subject matter for low back pain and the hip fracture protocol had a great project manager from orthopedics, I recruited Randy Thomas, the orthopedic special projects manager, to make the paradigm more orthopedic focused and named Randy the project manager of the team. Before developing this paradigm, there was not a standardized practice in my department of when or what image we ordered and an equally non-standardized practice on pain management. Patients were placed in observation status to obtain which we hope would be timely MRIs and specialty consults. When forming the back pain team, I sought out membership from the chairs of neurosurgery, orthopedics, the director of trauma. I included Greg, of course, in addition to Dr. David Zoder, my assistant residency director, who completed a fellowship in evidence-based medicine. Also included was the director of physical therapy, my ED's PharmD, case management, and last but not least, vital important members of our EPIC implementation team from our EMR. The project needed a name, and the assembled team came up with We Got Your Back, a great name for the project since it implies our partnering with the patient and their families to help them improve their back pain concerns. Now that the team was formed, we as a team were able to review the literature and all the evidence-based research regarding back pain. Our IT colleagues were able to leverage our EMR to help with the transition of our paradigm into discrete IT decision trees, which would guide the clinician to a specific pathway, which would then drive the treatment and disposition of the patient. The data entry points were fixed and discrete and would allow for easy abstraction, data collection, and population into the EQUAL and CEDAR registries. These pathways would also drive specific patient education materials to inform patients and their families on their back pain condition. The provider's initial assessment of the patient's condition from conducting a focus history and physical exam would lead them to stratify patients into three categories and pathways that we termed green, amber, or red. The green pathway would treat patients symptomatically with the emphasis on narcotic avoidance. There would be absolutely no imaging for these patients, and they would follow up with their primary care provider. The amber pathway would also be an attempt at narcotic avoidance. These patients, with the assistance of patient navigators, obtain timely follow-up appointments with one of our spine specialists and obtain expedited MRI or CT imaging studies and further testing for possible surgical or non-surgical interventions, all on an outpatient basis. None of these patients would be going to observation and clogging up my observation unit. The green and amber pathways are known as get up and go, since the expectation that these patients would be discharged from the emergency department after assessment and treatment. If the initial assessments led the clinician to the red pathway, they would be led there by utilizing the acronym TUNAFISH that I think a lot of emergency medicine physicians know. This would allow identification of potentially emergent back pain conditions that may require admission to the hospital or observational status. We are then able to expedite their scheduling of their MRIs, CAT scans, and other testing and specialty spine consultations. For the future, we are looking for the use of trigger point injections and the use of acupuncture as a way to treat acute pain with a referral to our wellness center for those discharged. This would promote avoidance of narcotics and the education of patients on exercise and the development of healthy backs. Educational resources of Equal and R-Scan are built into our care paradigms. We have built clinical decision pathways into our EMR using evidence-based guidelines that are parallel to Equal. This allows education of the provider each time they treat a patient that fits the paradigm, taking the place of periodic or episodic education. We have replicated this process now in all the clinical paradigms for Equal and Cedar, which are all in different stages of development.
So, Joe, can you give us a summary of what you just talked about, kind of wrap up how you went about things, and if you had to tell somebody brand new coming into this what the steps were, can you give us that in a short summary?
Now we understand the process of our secret sauce. Develop an interdisciplinary team, develop the evidence-based literature, develop the mission and goals of the program, develop paradigms and pathways, and leverage your EMR to help guide clinicians and upload data. Get data back and educate providers on how they're doing with them sticking with the guidelines. Get feedback also from frontline staff, patients, and their families on suggestions on how we as leaders can continue to be supportive and improve the program.
So, Greg, I'm going to come back to you with a couple of questions. What do you recommend for hospitals that don't have a robust EMR? So they either have an EMR with limited capabilities or they're still using a paper record system.
So both these programs become more labor intensive if you don't have an advanced EHR, but they're both can be accomplished. So R-Scan and Equal can both be done manually. For R-Scan specifically, there's a web-based tool where you can just log pre- and post-intervention data into the logs and keep track of it. So how both initiatives work is you'll have a pre-assessment phase where you haven't done any education effort or built any paradigms in your EHR. Then you either build the paradigms in the EHR, or in this case, if you don't have that capability, you'd have education efforts around appropriate use of imaging, probably multidisciplinary. Then you'd have a post-assessment measurement phase that, again, you would have to look at chart extractions and do manually. So it does become labor intensive. There's one other kind of stopgap mechanism. Under the Protecting Access to Medicare Act for 2014, beginning in January 1st of 2018, anybody ordering advanced imaging would have to consult with appropriate use criteria electronically. Now, there is an exemption for emergency medical services when it's an emergent patient, but you could conceivably use this software to provide a decision support score on how appropriate your imaging is, and use it as a surrogate for a more advanced electronic health record.
This question could go to either one of you. How do you get physicians who maybe have had a longstanding practice of ordering certain tests that in your new pathways aren't necessarily indicated, or consultants who are requesting a specific test before consultation that, again, is not indicated in your new pathway? How do you get them on board, and how do you get uptake of your new pathway?
The first part of the question, I think, is how do we address the medical community? And I think that was the point of bringing leadership from all the different disciplines of people that would touch these patients. So they would all realize that there was going to be a paradigm shift and change. So whenever we would get pushback, we could always refer them to the respective leaders so they could re-educate them on the paradigm. As far as my own attendings, we're a faculty practice, so it makes it a little bit easier. We utilize a EMR called OLA, where we educate the attendings and the residents on staff. We then bring it forward in faculty meetings. And the way we have leveraged our EMR, it's really the EMR that's leading them down this path. So they're sort of fixed into certain prescribing patterns for pain medications or imaging. So we're really leveraging the EMR to help guide that practice and change it.
I know we already talked about some of these, but do you have any barriers that you encounter that you think would be useful for us to know about, and any suggestions for how to get over them or at least predict them?
Hi, this is Greg. I just want to add to that. If you want to put it back into the R-Scan and Equal initiatives, there are some barriers in trying to make our program fit that initiative, in that if we're using the EHR paradigms as our education intervention, then our pre-assessment data can be hard to capture because you have to figure out when did someone come in with low back pain that would have fallen in the green pathway before the green pathway was created. That results in some manual extraction and some labor, even with this initiative. So there are some technology barriers, even when we're using technology to try to solve some of the other barriers.
This question probably goes more to Joe, but have you incorporated any other therapies such as stress reduction or any other services such as physical therapy into your pathway?
For the low back pain protocol, our physical therapy department has become an active member, but some of our other paradigms, especially chest pain, even if they rule out with chest pain through a rapid workup, whether in-house or out of the hospital, we're referring those patients to our wellness center so they can learn about relaxation techniques, exercise, and eating right.
This is not specifically related to imaging, but there are some guidelines that require hospital systems to begin to use clinical decision support in their EMR. Do you see the ER being a place that ends up being required to do this?
The statute specifically reads that you have to use it in outpatient services and emergency services that aren't emergent. And I think that's open to interpretation, but that's straight from the statute. So I think that it probably won't be used all that often in the emergency department. I think that there's enough wiggle room to probably get out of that. We're certainly going to hear more on the regulatory language coming up in the physician fee schedule, which will probably be out the end of June, early July, and we'll learn a lot more. So I think in time, emergency rooms will probably adopt it, at least for the non-emergent, non-life-threatening cases, but I suspect not initially.
Something I know that has come up in this arena before is how do you handle insurance pre-approval, specifically as it comes to the MRI?
Okay, a good question. Well, when you're in observational status, you don't need pre-authorization, or if the person is in a red pathway, obviously it's emergent and you don't need it as well. Our spine service has agreed to take all comers, whatever their insurance status is, as a follow-up appointment. And we've just recently established patient navigators that will concurrently, as patients are referred for outpatient stress tests or MRIs or other types of testing, they will concomitantly start working on that pre-authorization. So by the time they've seen the subspecialist, those pre-authorizations are in place. About 99.9% of the time, with these types of referrals, the authorization is never denied. It's just a problem with getting it started early enough.
For any of these pathways, did either one of you have to manage several different independent physician groups, or was everything grouped together under the same academic practice?
I run an academic faculty practice, but a lot of the other people from the interdisciplinary groups that were represented at the table, it's a mixture of some people working for the hospital, some of them being in private practice. So the key there is to get the leadership on those committees and on those teams so they can then work out within their own departments and disseminate that information with the members of their own departments.
This is a question that's been addressed in our previous recording, but I think it's important to go over it again. How do you respond to physicians who say that they're ordering tests that are not recommended by the evidence base because of malpractice concerns?
Well, I can answer that because I do a lot of medical malpractice work. I'm an expert witness. And it's very clear on cases that go to court, if you have a policy within your department on how you treat people and you follow that policy and it's based on evidence-based research and you have done a good history and physical and documented well in the EMR, the risk of a medical malpractice successful suit is very, very slim.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Feldman and Dr. Nicola, for being here. I really appreciate you talking to us about this important topic. I do want to summarize just a little bit. It's easy to walk away from this and think that all the information today is coming from an advanced medical center with a high-tech EHR, and those things are true, but there are many takeaways that can apply to any practice environment. Leadership definitely needs to recognize that there is an important role for standardizing at least some of our work, particularly where there is clear research and known risks and benefits. There is need for a multidisciplinary team, and importantly, the team members have to have the power and the authority to actually make change. Leverage wherever you are as far as the electronic health record or in your workflow and start there. Everybody's going to have a different entry point. And finally, there needs to be a close relationship between radiology and the ED whenever developing something like this. And I really want to point out that on top of those services, gathering whoever is going to eventually take care of these patients, whether it be orthopedic or a spine clinic, the imaging center, and even places such as physical therapy, all of those stakeholders should be involved and can really make it much easier to track your patients through a pathway like this and make it successful. This has been the ASEP Emergency Quality Network Avoidable Imaging Wave 2 webinar. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I've been your host, Dr. Jason Woods.